Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, November 24th, 2015. A former minister forms a new rebel group to fight the Kiir administration.
I'm called to help, to lead, to be with the people, and that is what I accepted. We want all these, the oppressive ethnic army elements, to be removed from Western Equatoria.
And Jonglei lawmakers encourage reconciliation among communities.
I think it is our duty as a members of the Jonglei State Legislative Assembly, or the members of the assemblies wherever in South Sudan, to sensitize people, to educate people about the dividend of peace in South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A former minister of information in Western Equatoria State has formed a new rebel group. Charles Barnaba Kisanga says the South Sudan People's Patriotic Front, or SSPPF, will provide security to civilians who suffered attacks by the South Sudan Army in Mundri, Maridi, Iambio, Tombura, and Ezo counties. He says the new rebel group is made up of local vigilante group known as the Arrow Boys. Barnaba says they are ready to join hands with other rebel groups like the SPLM in opposition to provide security to civilians in Western Equatoria State.
The Arrow Boys who have been resisting and the communities have come together in Western Equatoria, and I agree that we have to form an armed struggle to resist this violence against the civilians in our area.
Were you dealing with the Arrow Boys when you were a minister?
As a minister, I was speaking on behalf of the people. I didn't close my eyes when things happened bad to the people. If the army went around on a rampage and attacked the civilians and burned their houses, I boldly put it straightforward. And in the government, even I called that this army should be transferred. The SPLA elements, especially the tribal ones who are attacking the civilians. So I was always in the defense of the people.
This is coming at a time when the country is preparing to enjoy peace that was signed in August. The rebels of the SPLM in opposition are coming to Juba, and you are forming a rebellion to fight who now?
This peace process, yes, it was signed. It is a good document, but the people in Juba, the clique that runs the country, is not interested in the peace. Even the IGAD leaders who are supposed to go to Juba, but they failed to go because the government keeps on violating the peace.
You're saying you're now the chairman and commander-in-chief of the Arrow Boys. How many troops are under your command?
Their number have reached over 20,000 now. They see that they can now unify under one leadership. They've been fighting alone with nobody to back them. But now, at least, there are political leaders who can back them and stand up for them. So the number will keep swelling.
Some people are saying this kind of development are done by people who are opportunists. They want to seize an opportunity for their own good. You are saying here that you are speaking on behalf of the people of Western Equatoria State. What can you tell me to make me believe that, in fact, the people of Western Equatoria are all behind you?
It is a movement of the people to resist all the pressure that lives on them. So for me, I'm called to help, to lead, to be with the people, and that is what I accepted. We want all these, the oppressive ethnic army elements, to be removed from Western Equatoria, because they are not there for the defense of the people. They are there in order to destroy the people and take over their land.
When you say ethnic army, which ethnicity are you talking about here?
Most of the army deployed to Western Equatoria is 90% from one ethnic group.
And looking at your list of officers and commanders, it looks like they're also all from one tribe, your tribe, Zande.
Well, that, as you can see, there are some groups already who organize themselves. I say, as we said, these things are spontaneous. We have to join hands with all other armed resistance groups in Western Equatoria, including the national one like SPLM, IO. That is the main reason.
Why are you very quick to join hands with others when you have not even formed an office, when you have not even done anything on the ground? Why are you quick to join others? Does it mean you don't have power? You don't have power to achieve what you want to achieve by yourself?
No, we have power, but when we are fighting a tribal system, you have also to be able to embrace all the tribes in South Sudan. And if there are people who are resisting the same, then we have to work together.
Looking at your history, you have never been a trained military person. Now you are saying you are a commander-in-chief of an armed group. Are they going to train you?
Barack Obama is the commander-in-chief of the U.S. Army. Doesn't mean that you have to take up the gun and be there in the field. The commander-in-chief is the way all the army is answerable to the commander-in-chief, who is the overall, like the president of the country. It doesn't mean that a commander-in-chief must be a military man.
In your resistance movement, what is your rank? Are you a major general? Are you a first lieutenant general? Are you a field marshal?
Well, that is not important. As far as I'm commander-in-chief, that is the important thing, that I'm here to guide that movement.
That's Charles Barnaba Kisanga, the leader of the South Sudan People's Patriotic Front, a new rebel group in Western Equatorial State. He was speaking to me from an undisclosed location in East Africa today. Jonglei State lawmakers say they will work to promote peace and reconciliation among their communities. The state's acting state governor told lawmakers at the reopening of the state assembly yesterday that sustainable peace is the only solution to ending South Sudan's cycle of violence. Lawmakers say they will encourage their communities, torn apart by the deadly conflict, to reconcile and move forward as a united people. Jacob Achek has this report for VOA from Bor.
Addressing the sixth session of Jonglei State Assembly following a four-month recess, Acting Governor John Kong Nguyen called on lawmakers to preach peace and forgiveness and to back the signing peace deal in order to heal the wounds of the past and move forward.
We in Jonglei State are equally committed to this peace agreement. We must support it implementation for letter and spirit in all means possible so that our people can resume their normal lifestyle. I therefore request members of this august house to take larger responsibility to enlighten citizens of Jonglei State wherever they are in order peace for peace to forbid. People must be educated on the danger of war and benefit of peace.
Kong says Jonglei residents suffer greatly during the conflicts and continue to suffer.
Our people are suffering from hunger on a daily basis because they are not able to cultivate and rear their livestock in the villages because of this insecurity. But if peace prevails, many people will return home to cultivate and rear their livestock comfortably. I believe only if peace prevails that our economy will improve.
State Assembly Speaker Peter Ding Agwer says working for peace, reconciliation and healings will be the lawmakers' first priority. He says to that end, lawmakers will conduct mini peace conference in Ayut, Uror, Duke, Twitches and Bor counties.
Community sensitization at the grassroots and peace building among the local citizens to be started in accessible areas. Peace conferences between the affected communities of Jonglei State and people and administrative areas to stop cattle-raiding and child abduction is highly recommended.
Former Jonglei State Assembly Speaker Peter Cholwal says lawmakers will take the lead on educating their communities about the need for people of different communities to coexist peacefully.
I think it is our duty as members of the Jonglei State Legislative Assembly, all the members of the assemblies wherever in South Sudan, to sensitize people, to educate people about the dividend of peace in South Sudan.
John Joseph Abulawu represents the Foshala South constituency in the Jonglei State Assembly, says without peace, it will be impossible for the government to deliver services to the people.
Those who are still in UN camps and those who are still in IDPs, it is a time now to come back because the warring parties, they silent the guns. So this is time to come back to their homes and they start a new life because there's no need again for them to stay out of their places. Everybody is needed because peace is for all of us. We need to support it.
Abula encouraged residents to return home from the bush, saying they no longer have to live in fear. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
Some residents of a new state under President Salva Kiir's recent decree creating 28 states oppose the name Wau State. Elders say the new state should be given a historic name for the benefit of the coming generation, while others argue the name Wau will unite different communities in the area. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Wau.
South Sudan's parliament last week amended the transitional constitution, giving Mr. Kiir powers to appoint new assembly lawmakers and governors, which will pave the way for splitting the country into 28 states from the existing 10. As the nation awaits a ruling from the Council of the States, the upper house of the South Sudan Parliament on the number, boundaries, and names of the proposed states, lawmakers from Western Baragazali States, Wau and Ju River counties held a meeting at Wau's Peace Hall yesterday to talk about possibly renaming the proposed Wau State. Speaking in Arabic, Elder Paul Atuk says he welcomes the creation of the new Wau State, but wants to change the name.
Ulaya Wau, Firaina Mokul Kaulaya.
We have accepted Wau as a new state, but I am against its name. We want to look for a historical name that has been there for more than 200 years. So it's our responsibility now to give the name Barkazal to the new state, and its capital should be in Wau.
Elizabeth Mario agrees with Atuk, citing the example of the name Sudan. Speaking in Arabic, she points out the world's newest country retained the name Sudan even after the South Sudanese secede from Sudan to form their own country.
When we separated from Sudan, we still kept the same name because it is a historical name. Why do we reject the name of Baragazal? It is a historical name like Sudan. So I would say, let's keep Baragazal, and our capital should remain in Wau.
Michael Geba Ukelo, another participant at yesterday's meeting, approves the name of the new state, Wau, saying the name can unite people in the state.
We are all from Wau, and the newly proposed state is called Wau State. So let's consider this as a source of our unity. Why do we go back to the name Barakazal? Up to now, some of us still think the name Barakazal is associated with marginalization. I don't support the idea of the name Barakazal. Let's not bring more problems of Barakazal to Wau.
During the meeting, residents also discussed border issues with neighboring states and the Central African Republic. Wau County resident Francis Ibrahim says he worries that the new map of Wau will leave out some areas endowed with natural resources. Speaking in Arabic, he insists the new Wau state should be based on a 1965 map drawn by a British colonialist.
I see in the map that some parts of our area have been cut out, and I think it's because these areas are full of natural resources. When I visited the area recently, there's looting of our bamboos to another state. Our brother is well known, starting from Kor Hajar.
Some participants also urged that more counties to be created in the new state. Elder Aywin Longar says, while that might be a good idea, now might not be the right time to demand the creation of more counties in the area.
It is good to ask for more counties, but we have to make sure we have enough people and resources that will manage those counties.
At the conclusion of yesterday's meeting, participants form a 5-member committee that will collect information about the state's border as well as a document opposing views about the creation of new counties. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, women meet in Juba to discuss issues to do with the peace agreement. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you like most about yourself?
The courage I have, which some of my friends and relatives question, whether it is actually misguided courage or is actually real courage.
The most thing I like about myself is that I'm an honest person. What is in my mind, what is in my heart is on my mouth. I don't hide anything. I don't lie. I just speak the truth, whether it hurts, whether whatever, I just say it.
What I like most about myself is how I easily mingle with people. So I find myself comfortable wherever I find myself.
My optimism. I am generally positive. I don't see problems. I see solutions.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about antibiotics. A new study outlines dual problems with antibiotics. The first is a lack of access to the drugs in many areas, while the second is growing antibiotic resistance. The study by the British medical journal, the Lancet, says many lives are being lost as a result. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The Lancet study is supported by researchers at the New York-based Center for Disease Dynamics, Economics, and Policy. Ramanan Lakshmanarayan is CDDEP director. He says many children needlessly die from disease each year for want of antibiotics.
We have two problems here. One is that not enough people in the world have access to effective antibiotics. And the second is many of them, even when they get access to an antibiotic, may have resistant infection, which means the antibiotics are not working for them anymore.
He says increasing the use of antibiotics in about 100 countries could prevent many deaths.
We estimate that if you universally provide antibiotics, we could save about 440,000 deaths just with pneumonia every year. Now, resistance is also a problem, and here we estimate that there are probably about 200,000 plus deaths associated with infections in newborns around the world. So this too is a problem.
The lack of access to antibiotics usually occurs in low and middle income countries.
There is a lack of access simply because of a lack of affordability. A lot of people are just too poor to be able to buy an antibiotic. That's number one. Number two, when they do get an antibiotic, it might be spurious or it might be a fake drug. So the idea is not just to get access to a antibiotic, it's to get access to an effective antibiotic.
The World Health Organization has launched a global campaign to raise awareness about antibiotic resistance, a program called Antibiotics, Handle with Care.
Well, antibiotic resistance is a consequence of the use, overuse, and misuse of antibiotics, both for human health as well as in agriculture and aquaculture. About two-thirds of antibiotics are used globally in the agricultural sector. The one-third that is used in humans, a lot of it is inappropriate use. Even in the United States, probably over half of the antibiotics that are used are inappropriate.
Lakshmanarayan says too many people think of antibiotics as a cure-all that can be easily used without any consequences. He says that's not true.
When we overuse antibiotics, we reduce the chance that it's going to work for us in the future. It lowers the chance that it's going to work for people that are close to us, and then, of course, for the rest of society. This is a huge public health issue around the world. Much like HIV, it connects both the developed and the developing world.
He says many people in urban areas are able to buy antibiotics without a prescription. That contributes to resistance. The Lancet study says there are several things that can be done.
We can begin with a few things. We can reduce use of antibiotics in agriculture. Even in the United States, a lot of the antibiotics are given subtherapeutically. What that means is the antibiotics are given to animals in very low concentrations with their feed every day, ostensibly to make them grow faster and also to prevent disease. Phasing that out would probably cut out about 25% of the antibiotics that we use today. Better hospital infection control can help.
Many patients catch infections while they're in a hospital. Antibiotic use rises sharply during the flu season. Even though antibiotics are not effective against viruses, the drugs are widely and inappropriately prescribed. Lakshmanarayan says more widespread use of the flu and pneumococcal vaccines could greatly reduce the use of antibiotics to prevent possible secondary infections.
For pneumonia, in many countries, the children don't get the antibiotic on time. So I would say that a child with pneumonia does need antibiotics, but in many instances they don't get them, which is why we lose probably over 500,000 children every year just to that one disease.
The Center for Disease Dynamics, Economics, and Policy recently warned of more deaths following organ transplant surgeries and cancer chemotherapy because antibiotics have become less effective against opportunistic infections. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
We now move back to South Sudan. South Sudanese women activists are meeting in Juba today to talk about the role women can play in implementing the peace deal signed by President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar in August. The women are discussing key provisions of the deal, including reconciliation, security arrangement, and justice. VOA fellow Tito Justin has this report.
Some of the 300 women attending the two-day session sing songs of people as the meeting gets underway here in the capital. They have come from all 10 states to take part in what is being called the National Women's Peace Dialogue. Awut Deng Achwil is South Sudan's Minister for Gender, Child Social Welfare and Humanitarian Affairs.
The objective of this national dialogue, RS, to provide opportunity for the common understanding of the agreement. There is a need to create awareness about the agreement. It is a law that has been passed by the National Legislative Assembly. There is a need to promote inclusive and popular ownership of South Sudanese, a need to promote a culture of peace, the need for women as critical stakeholders to participate in the implementation of the agreement.
The meeting was organized by South Sudan's Gender Ministry and South Sudan Women's Peace Network and received funding from the United Nations. Women leaders from Uganda, Kenya, South Africa, and the African Union have all come to share their experiences with the South Sudanese women and to support their effort to demand a larger role in the peace implementation process. Achwil says, aside from discussing peace and reconciliation, the women will also talk about some of the issues that have plagued South Sudan for years, such as early child marriage, poor infrastructure, and chronic underfunding for women's development activities. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe, who attended the meeting in place of First Lady Mary Ayen Mayerdi, denies that the government is setting out women in the implementation of the peace agreement.
I call upon you all to join the government, to join us in the implementation of the agreement. The agreement did not ignore women. There are women groups who are signatories to the agreement. And the participation of the women in the implementation of the agreement is very clear. The women have a role to play in the implementation of the agreement. So I expect all of you to join hands with your government, work for the implementation of the agreement. Because it is only through implementation that we will reach peace. It is not enough that we have signed it in paper.
Makwe encouraged the women to step up their advocacy programs across the country and to speak out against the challenges they face, such as child marriages.
Try your level best to educate your sisters and daughters. It is through education that women will come up and take charge of their responsibilities.
Betty Bigombe, Senior Director for Fragility, Conflict and Violence at the World Bank, who was chief mediator during peace talks between the Ugandan government and the Lord's Resistance Army rebels during the 1990s, says South Sudanese women should keep advocating for the total restoration of peace in the country when they return to their villages.
We should not only talk peace when we are gathered like here today. We should talk peace in our own homes. We should talk peace with our communities. We should talk to our husbands. We should talk to our sons and preach peace. We should not be talking to ourselves alone. We should reach out men in high position in politics, civil society organizations, because we need them on our side if we are going to win this war. We need them to go and advocate where probably we women cannot reach.
A special representative of the UN Secretary General Ellen Margaret Laws says, despite the signing of a peace deal, violence against women continues.
Peace will never be sustainable in South Sudan, nor in any other country in the world, unless the voices of women are heard, and unless their concerns and special needs are taken into consideration.
The theme for the meeting is South Sudan We Want. South Sudan in Focus asked the women gathered at today's meeting what that means to them.
I'm very proud today because we women, we are in one line as a woman of South Sudan who are suffering. We want South Sudan to be very peaceful without crisis. It will be developed roads and a school for our children and the else for our self. This is South Sudan we want. The government or opposition, all of you are son of South Sudan. Enough is enough. We, the women of South Sudan, today, you are our son, you are our husband, you are our government. All of you are coming out from the women. So we want you all to listen to us, we women of South Sudan.
I'm happy and I'm very glad today to see all the women of South Sudan that are coming together in a dialogue. It is very important dialogue today because it's missing our heart. We women, we are really broke heart for the war long. And suddenly we get the golden peace. It was brought to us, but we didn't get a life which is better for us. Now we are here. We are a one country, one nation, one woman. We need to see our South Sudan where it's going to, and we are in charge in anything happen. As a woman, we need a peace in this country. We need a stability of the country. We need a people to live in harmony. We need all the Southerners to be united and to bring their country in a vision that they need it. But if we did not put it in the right place, who is coming? Whom we are waiting to come and do it for us?
Those are the voices of participants, Deborah Yar and Margaret Takon. Participants are expected to deliver a position paper at the end of the meeting detailing their recommendations for including more women in the peace deal's implementation process. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Washington.
Waki Simon Wudu prepared that report from Juba. And that's the end of our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with a song, Agamlong Agar by Akoi Jazz Band. Been listening to Akoi Jazz Band with the song Jam Long Agar, I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm not afraid to die.